fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Une émission par Nadia Lichtig.
We meet today David Joselit, art historian and critic, currently chair of art, film and visual studies and professor at Harvard University. David Joselit is one of the key thinkers shaping contemporary debates on painting, mediation and the circulation of images. Our paths first crossed in Munich in 2018, then again in Marseille in May 2025, on the occasion of the symposium La peinture, ça n'appartient pas, where David was invited to speak about the artist Blythe Bonin. More recently, he also came to Vancouver, where he visited the Belkin Gallery at the University of British Columbia on the occasion of Abbas Akhavan's exhibition. Today's conversation returns to David's talk at the Marseille Symposium, extending the questions he raised: how painting records action, how gesture becomes mediated rather than expressive, and how practices such as Bonin's unsettle inherited narratives of authorship, freedom, and representation. The conversation is followed by an echolalia, a radio painting named 24 Brush Strokes. Inspired by Blythe Bonin's 48 brush strokes from 1971, acrylic on canvas.
Yay, we did
okay.
It.
So, David Joselit, I'm so happy that we are able to speak today and to have a discussion about the talk you gave in May, on the 15th of May, at Aix-Marseille University about Blythe Bonin. So, at that time, the title of the talk was Mediated Gestures. And in this presentation, you explored the work of Blythe Bonin, focusing on her paintings from the late 60s and 70s. And on the very specific way she treated the brush stroke, not as a spontaneous emotional outburst, but as a gesture shaped by process, structure, and meditation. And what struck me is how her work seemed to slow down the abstract expressionism. And through washing, repetition, and the use of the grid, her gestures became both actions and records of those actions. He showed also how her practice connects artistic questions to broader ideas about democracy, freedom, documentation, and even scientific thinking, especially through her interest in Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. I'd like to begin by asking you to situate Blythe Bonin's work within the artistic context of her time and to tell us what first drew you to her practice.
Okay, great. Thank you. So Bonin made a series of paintings in the late 60s and 70s where she would make gestures that were controlled by the scope of her hand. So she didn't use her arm so much, but used her hand. And what she would do is repeatedly create gestures on a canvas with wet paint and then wash some of that paint off, as you mentioned. So, and she would do this in a grid format so that there would be a succession or field of gestures, as opposed to a kind of superimposed tangle of gestures, let's say, or a singular image. And so I think slowing down abstract expressionism is definitely something she did through almost a kind of textile mode of making work that had this repetitive labor involved with it. But also each gesture, one thing that you said that is important in the argument I was making is that actions and the recording of those actions are simultaneous. So what I argue is that the way that the washed brushstroke almost looks skeletal because so much of the paint is taken off of it, that it resembles in many ways a kind of photograph. And in fact, Bonin later in her career made photographic self-portraits, where she attempted to, well, she not only attempted, but succeeded in tracing geometric figures with the light reflection on her eyes, from the lighting she was submitting to while being photographed by moving her eyes. So, in a sense, her gestures have always been quite constrained and have had this quality of a performance that is repeated over and over again. So her paintings are really quite related to post-minimalist forms of process art, and also artists who were interested, such as Robert Ryman, on the one hand, in understanding painting as an accumulation of gesture that maybe wasn't so much about the unconscious or a sort of intuitive form of making, but rather a repetitive action. And so, on the one hand, there's Robert Ryman on one side of this kind of spectrum, and on the other is a practice like Lichtenstein's brushstrokes, which look like they're mass-produced or mass-mediated photographed. The democracy element that you bring up, I think, comes from the idea that, first of all, she was well aware that in abstract expressionism, the idea of the gesture was understood, I should say, often as an act of freedom. But what she does by repeating that act over and over again is, in a sense, making it available to anyone, since she's enacting it over and over in the painting. So in a way, the paintings have a very, they don't cohere in a certain way. The grid forces them to cohere, but they don't cohere as a kind of singular image, but rather as a collection of individual marks, each of which suggest a kind of practice of that freedom of the gesture.
So is that the way she related that to democracy, that in a way that the process means to stay in the making, to speak about the democratic values? Is that a way of formally expressing that?
Yeah, she doesn't really give a clear explanation. This reference to democracy comes a little bit out of the blue. And so for me, I think what I read it as is this iteration of the freedom of the gesture on the one hand, and almost as opposed to the abex creation of an image from that gesture, it's almost as though the gesture making it is what matters, and she indicates that through the repetition, but also the idea of acting and representing, since democracy has so much to do with representation in many, maybe all of its modalities except for direct democracy. This idea of thinking what an action and a representation, how they relate to one another, I think that that is a very important dimension of democracy that she addresses quite, through quite a sort of distanced, mediated way. So I don't think that in her own writings she really completely elaborates what that might mean, but I was struck by that statement and tried to kind of think backwards or think through her work in terms of it.
During the talk, you also stated that she was quite critical concerning Klein's work, since she was trying to do the contrary in a way.
Yeah, I think she, again, these are my interpretations. I never met her. She had already died by the time I was made aware of her work. So, for what it's worth, these are my interpretations. But I think, yes, I think that for her, Klein's work cohered into a kind of monumental image that was beyond the scale of the human gesture. I think she was really interested in the scale of the hand and the scale of the eye, what one can do with these micro gestures. She was really interested, I think, in a kind of discipline of the gesture and almost a sort of creating a kind of spectrum of gestural possibility. And I think that that's why she didn't always use the grid to organize her paintings, but I think she primarily did. And therefore, the grid allowed for this kind of separation and combination that is fairly neutral.
And is there a link, you think, to Oriental philosophy?
I mean, that makes sense, but I don't have any evidence that that's the case. You mentioned Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which is that the kind of measurement of something, I mean, this is from a very lay position, obviously, not a scientist, but that the act of measuring actually affects what's measured, that there isn't a kind of way of extracting the act of measurement from that which is measured, or the action from the representation, we could say, within the realm of painting. And so I think her interest comes perhaps more from that. She did study science, and so I think that she was really intrigued by that on the one hand. And she also, I think the question, I can't remember if I brought this up so much in the lecture, but in the longer essay that it's drawn from, I talk about the relation she had with modern dance and kind of gestural repetition within postmodern dancers. So I think that, which she was explicitly interested in. So I think that, obviously that kind of idea of Asian philosophies were what had sort of suffused the New York art world to a certain degree. So it may have been there. I'm not sure it was something that she explicitly engaged with.
However, the science influence was explicit, so she studied science.
Yeah, she did study science in college. I mean, not, professionally, but she took courses. She was interested in Heisenberg directly. So Dorothea Rockburn is another artist that she was interested in, who I think there is a way in which there was a kind of feminism that wasn't so body related. That someone like Dorothea Rockburn and even the sort of dancers, the postmodern dancers, so Trisha Brown, etc., were engaged in a kind of abstract form of feminine assertion that didn't, really engage with a direct image of the body. Although, the body is present through gesture and its manipulation of materials, but not as a kind of whole body image.
It makes definitely sense to draw in Heisenberg concerning perception, because,
Right.
with the drawing and the pencil and the shadow, the photographs, it's exactly that. So the way you perceive things depend on how you look at them.
Yeah, exactly. And the mark is really very different depending on how it's mediated or refracted through these different media, whether photography or drawing. And then that's why I think her later photographic work, which has had a lot more, well, not that it's had a lot of exposure, but it's had more exposure since her death. She wasn't interested really in showing for a very long time. And her work entered was her estate was given to an art dealer who's in Wellesley, Massachusetts, not exactly in a big art center, named David Hall, who just really spent time talking with her over many years and, was friendly with her and got to know her very well. And it was through him, to answer one of your previous questions, that he asked me to write about the work. So she wasn't someone whose work I had really known before, and I found it really intriguing. And also, it felt like something worthwhile to really try to work on a career that was really very interesting and that hadn't, largely through the artist's own decisions, hadn't entered so much into the art historical record.
The expression dry cleaning is also very funny. So she was using that seriously, like saying dry cleaning her painting. Would she say also dry cleaning abstract expressionism?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't remember the exact quote, but Yes, I mean, I think she was interested in this. Might be another dimension that could be understood as feminist, you know, because she was a member of, I'm blocking on the name, but you know, the famous feminist gallery, Air Gallery, in New York. And yet her work, as I said a moment ago, doesn't really thematize or doesn't seem to thematize feminism in the same way. But I think her attitude toward an artist like Klein, or saying something like dry cleaning, abstract expressionism, really has to do, I think, with taking its rhetorical, deflating its high rhetorical value in a certain kind of way, and really thinking about what a bodily gesture is, you know, what the capacity and range of an actual hand is, as opposed to, you know, this kind of more heroic sort of practice that, and of course, this was happening, you know, in several post-minimalist performative practices, you know, including by artists who had a very heroic masculine profile, such as Richard Serra, for instance, you know, whose work you could really set against Blythe Bonin's in interesting ways.
Yeah, the fact that she's washing her painting. I mean, washing is also like to get kind of the excess of maybe too much emotion out of that as well.
Yeah.
There's something very delicate about it, which maybe wasn't understood at the time. I guess
Yeah.
maybe that's why she wouldn't even try to show it to.
Yeah. But with that said, you know, her work, when she did show it, people like Lawrence Alloway wrote about her work. I mean, I think she was a well-respected and known figure in the New York art world. And I don't exactly know why she retreated from that, but it isn't as though she was an entire she wasn't entirely a kind of hermit either. She wasn't disengaged entirely, and she was part of that world but chose to withdraw from it. So not like Leigh Lozano, but you know, it's not uninteresting to think about different strategies of withdrawal. She didn't stop making work, you know. Yeah, I mean, and she withdraws, you know, literally, she does it materially in the paintings, of course, right? By withdrawing the paint, or taking away the paint. So it's interesting because it's a subtractive process, but also an accumulative one. So there's some, she kind of creates these different paradoxes, like the action representation, the additive and the subtractive, which the grid allows, you know, allows one to do, I guess. It's a useful format.
And also with the photographs, she's drawing with the eyes.
Yeah.
So this is also a reversal of procedures. These photographs, you said that these were more shown because she decided that, or?
I'm not quite sure why they were, maybe because they entered into collections. I really don't quite know why, but the reason, you know, this isn't very theoretical, but I was asked to write about the paintings, but I really felt, I mean, you put it perfectly when saying that the photographs are drawing with the eyes, because that's exactly what they are. And what's fascinating is that because she's moving, her body is moving, she does sketch these figures that you can see, that are light around her eyes, but the body itself is quite blurred. So there's another paradox there. So there's, you know, a kind of precision in what the eye is drawing, but then what the viewer sees of her body becomes obscured. And I think, you know, it would be interesting to think this through more along the lines that you said. I mean, what does it mean for a presumed spectator, you know, the person who sees, to be the one who's drawing? I mean, it really, you know, you could understand that. I think that this is a feminist dimension, or just a kind of activist dimension on behalf of giving power to the spectator, you know, in the sense that when we're looking, we're also drawing, which, you know, we know is true, because you don't look at a painting like the way a television scans an image, or it doesn't do that anymore. But we look at a painting by drawing our eyes from one place to another. So I do think that that practice is integrally related to the paintings, and sort of the successor practice to the paintings. But that wasn't in the scope of the thing I wrote, so.
Echo Lalia. Echo Lalia. Echo Lalia. Echolalia. 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 Kammer Phantom. Kammer Phantom. Kammer Phantom. Une émission par Nadia Lichtig.